Good afternoon, everyone. Welcome to Midday Magazine for this July 28th, 2023. Have your host, James, here. I am joined by some of our good friends. We have Craig Broren, superintendent with Wisconsin Rapids Public Schools. Good morning, Craig. Good afternoon, Craig.
Good afternoon.
Good to have you here. And we have Phil, I always do this with your last name.
Phil Bickelhaup.
Thank you. Phil is with us. He is the director of technology. Appreciate you both being here. First off, how's everybody doing? Are you enjoying your summer so far? Craig, how's it going?
Good. It's good. Been reasonably quiet. We've got that fairly sizable playground construction project going on over at Woodside, which is super exciting. They're telling us that should be ready for, ready for the start of school when kids arrive. So that'll be awesome. And it'll be a great amenity on that side of the city.
Yeah, they're doing some really good work over there, too. And that looks like it's on schedule.
Yeah.
I pass it all the time. And it looks like they're doing some great work over there. That is great to hear.
Yeah.
So we're going to talk a little bit about education and technology today, a little bit of AI. And I turn to you, Phil, with this, where it's such a broad topic and there's so many different angles of it and everything. But I want to just discuss what do you think is the most important part of this changing kind of this adaption that we're doing, where we're doing more tech in our education and that? What is something that, you know, families out there, you think is important for them to know about this?
Well, you know, for those that don't know what AI is, it's artificial intelligence, and it's really starting to seep its way into everything that we do. It's kind of been doing that way for a long time,
yeah.
But now it's really readily accessible at fingertips with ChatGPT, mm-hmm. OpenAI, and it's amazing technology where you can just type in a question and it'll give you an answer. It's kind of like, you know, Craig and I have talked about, you know, the Google, when that first came out, it was going to be this game changer, and with Google, it just gives you a list of websites, whereas ChatGPT will actually give you, if you ask it to give you step-by-step detailed instructions on how to do something, it'll spit that right back out at you. And a lot of our, I wouldn't say our elementary teachers are too concerned about it. It's more of our upper-level high school staff. The high school kids might put in questions, might get a creative writing paper written by ChatGPT for them or something along those lines. So we're really trying to figure out how to navigate that landscape with, how do you do that?
Yeah.
With this technology, because it's not going to go away. Not going to go away.
Journalistically, I should mention I'm a part of the Writers and Actors Guild and a part of that strike. I have a bit of a dog in this when it comes to this battle going on. I like a lot of people, I have this concern on AI, but I don't have this fear of it. But I'm also not in the public schools. My children are in their 20s. So this world of fearing about cheating or any of these other kind of things, I've had to do my homework on this, talk to some parents, about that. And what I'm seeing a lot of, just hearing from the individuals that I am, that a lot of the onus on this is not saying it's been put on, parents have been taking on themselves a little bit more than teachers, where, hey, is Johnny cheating? Is Johnny doing this? I'm going to talk to Johnny. I'm looking at his search history and these things. But how do teachers adapt to something like this? I'm very curious about that part of it.
Well, so that's the interesting aspect of it, and Phil did a great introduction. ChatGPT is probably what we've been focused on to a fairly significant degree because it's basically text-based. And what I think is valuable for your listeners to understand, too, is that these tools, similar tools for images and video and, you know, writing and all of the other things, are being integrated into things like Google and Microsoft, software. And so, as Phil mentioned, it's going to be ubiquitous. We're kind of, there. And then ultimately what ends up happening is that, you have conversations in education, much like Google, when that came out, like Phil had mentioned, what does this mean to what we're doing? What does this mean to how we conduct business? Because, of course, the knee-jerk reaction is block it. Well, let's just block it so kids don't have access to it. Well, under that logic, you are going to stave off potentially some issues for a short period of time. But if this is integrated into virtually everything that you're interfacing with, at some point in the relatively near future, you're fighting a losing battle. Mm-hmm. Number two, this idea that we have to be resistant to change in education is just as laughable as it is anywhere else in any sector. And so when you think about mechanisms by which we can utilize this to our benefit, you're now thinking along the right lines, right? So back in the old days, I'm old enough that clearly Google wasn't around when I was a kid. And in fact, it wasn't even around until after I graduated college.
But I hear you.
The point is that there was some concern. Oh, the kid can just, and I taught science. The kid can just Google and get the answer. Mm-hmm. You know, so, oh, let's not have them have cell phones. Let's not have them use computers when they take a test. And that happened for a bit. But then also we kind of came to our senses in education and thought, well, wait a second. If anybody can get these sorts of answers in milliseconds, right, then what is the point to memory recall sorts of questions? Isn't science, for example, more about application and understanding than it is about memory and recall? And the answer to that question is absolutely. And as an individual who worked in that sector prior to getting into public education, the things that you need, you memorize, you know, because you use them on a regular basis. The things that you don't use with regular frequency, then you have to go back and find the answer. And frankly, Google is great for that. But what's the benefit of me putting that on a test? Mm. Like if I say, James, what's Avogadro's number? And you can't come up with 6.022 times 10 to the 23rd because you're not operationally using it. Mm. That's inconsequential. Mm. You can put that in Google right now and have the answer. Boom, done. With ChatGPT, there's a similar framework. However, it's a bit more comprehensive, right? And us understanding and education in collaboration and working with parents, right, how we can use that to benefit ourselves and students and their learning is really what the linchpin is. And so parents that are engaged in understanding what their kids are or aren't doing is fantastic in any regard, whether it has to do with technology or whether it has to do with just being a decent human being, right? Mm-hmm. And everything under the sun. But clearly this is not a circumstance in which it's just a parent thing or just a school thing. And what's interesting about the ChatGPT piece is you can create, like, I mean, anything. Mm-hmm. You can say, you know, write a analysis of the five major themes in Lord of the Flies in the voice of a ninth grade student, and it will do so.
Yeah.
And then the question is, okay, how do we find out whether or not that's what a kid did? Well, there's software and tools that are being created to identify AI-generated materials. And then the other question is what does the process look like as we investigate this in the classroom? So we're not simply saying, hey, jump on ChatGPT and have it write you a neat little paper. Because frankly, that's not the point.
Yeah.
Right. The paper, the end result is really not the point. I mean, that's what you're going to get the grade on. But the stages of how you get there, the process of writing, identifying and utilizing your voice and, you know, backing conversations or information with data and sources, you know, these pieces. So that's really the linchpin. And it's quite interesting in terms of what it means for what we're doing and how it's going to look in the next 5 to 10 years.
When I teach at Second City, this came up, and we were had a little bit of a fear in our writing classes about this. So we tried it. We threw into a ChatGPT, write me a 2-minute sketch with you know, in a restaurant, and we got something out that a computer might laugh at, but nobody else is going to. And we tried this again and again and again, and everything that's kicking out is like that. It's not funny. It's a very like boring like scene and stuff, and we felt, well, okay, well, we're not going to worry about this as much. But as this has evolved, and that was only 2 months ago, and then a month later, all of a sudden it's adapted and it's a little bit better. And it's still not funny, but it's adapted, it's learning and everything. And so we talk about this openly with our class. We have adults, you know, it's not nearly the same thing as being in the high schools or grade schools or anything. And in talking about this, we have found from a lot of our students and everything that they are not using this stuff. So and I look at the stats, and I do a little look into this a little bit, and it does seem to be the concern is with grade school, with middle schools, with high schools, with that. We don't really have middle schools anymore, but with high schools and that. One of the things that I lean on with this is trusting our educators. I trust our education system. I trust our educators. I feel that this works out. I feel that we find that we get around to this one, whether it is, I'd love to talk with you more about the technology that can prevent this stuff or see this stuff, Phil. Right. I'd like to talk a little more about that, but whether it is those devices or it is just our human instinct and brain to be able to tell, well, Johnny didn't write this. There's not one thing in here that sounds like a kid from high school would write something like this. Like, if you're paying attention, I feel like you can see some differences. It's not to say it's a clear all. But I trust our educators. I don't have as much fear about this because of that. I also lean in on and trust what the job is. What the job is that I as a parent have. What the job is as you guys have as educators. And what we all signed up for. our job is, as much as we would love to protect our children and keep them in a bubble and not let the world ever affect them, ever have a sad day or anything like that, that is not our job. My daughter, my oldest daughter right now, is on a 30-hour train ride going from here to Texas. I would love anything more in the world than to be right beside her and make it darn sure she is safe through that whole trip. That ain't my job as a parent. I gotta let her do that. If I'm doing my job, she can fly on her own. So as educators, as parents, it is not to shelter our children and to keep them away from things like this, but to let them know about these things and to make them aware of it. So when they are at our age and they're out in society, they're that much more prepared for this stuff. So if anything, I think we should be facing these fears, these problems and everything. It's part of our job. Do you guys agree with that? Or because that's the way I'm looking at it and the way I'm seeing it.
Yeah, actually, we talked about in a book I've heard. It's called AI for Educators by Matt Miller. He's an educational kind of guru, and he has a little book that he wrote about this as soon as this stuff came out. And he talked about that, mm-hmm. where it's, like Craig alluded to, either mm-hmm. block, or do you – you know, let them have access to it, teach them how to use it appropriately in the classroom, you know, what should you use it for, what shouldn't you use it for, because ultimately when they graduate, they're going to go out into the world and they're going to have this stuff at their fingertips, and you have to teach the kids kind of like how you said, fly on their own and learn how to use the AI, because it's not going to go away and it's only going to get better and better. And maybe eventually they'll get funny.
Yeah, but maybe.
Not. I don't
know. You never know. Yeah.
And then how do you use it to maybe generate ideas of how what you're going to write your paper on, or generate main topics, and then go from there. Some kids struggle with that.
I want to get into two things with you here, Phil. First, I'd like to, unless you had some, Craig, I didn't want to cut you off if you did.
Great. Okay. But I think what I would quickly add is just this underlying idea. So I say this a bit tongue-in-cheek and with a heavy amount of sarcasm, but you know, you're only hurting yourself. Right. We all remember that phrase,
it's true.
Right?
It's true.
And
my mother saying it in the back of my
head. Absolutely.
Yeah.
And so if you're having a machine do your work for you, I think that's great if it's in the proper context. But when we're trying to assess and evaluate your relative ability to write something or maybe tell a joke or, you know, edit a video, whatever the case may be, it behooves us to ensure that the person that we're critiquing or evaluating is the human being doing it, right? And that's the piece where that support and understanding around what's the function of this. And what'll probably change over time is what our expectations are. And I say mm-hmm. over time because, of course, these things, you can't change on a dime. I mean, you remember when the VCR came out and the microwave came out, right? They weren't used like they were to the extent they were when they were in their heyday. I mean, mm-hmm. that's kind of how technology and the uptake of technology is. And so I just point that out and say, look, you know, it is a learning process on all sides, and identifying how best to integrate it while understanding we want to still see the human component and skills in order to ensure that we're imparting the correct emphasis on the skills we need to see to confer a diploma ultimately is what that's the game we're in.
You have to take a test in class. Chances are you're not going to be able to pull up your phone. So you're still going to have to answer these things when it comes right down to the push of it. Two things here that I wanted to talk with you about, Phil. One, you mentioned the tools to prevent this. I think that's very interesting. What kind of tools are there to notice these things or to prevent them?
Well, the biggest one that we're using in the district is a tool called No Red Ink.
Hmm.
And then the, I can't think of the other one, Craig, off the top of my head. It's Turn It In. You basically, the students have to submit their paper into Turn It In. And actually, Turn It In.
Oh, it's a site.
Yeah,
they
submit their paper to it. And actually, that started out as a way to prevent plagiarism and, mm-hmm. you know, make sure that kids were citing their paperwork. Their papers properly, and that they weren't actually just searching the internet to find a paper already done by that, and it would actually check the paper for its authenticity against, you know, other people's writings and how much phrases were the same. Well, now they built in an AI detector, like we can tell, because you mentioned earlier the voice. People have a voice, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
And you know, if a ninth grader that's not really a good writer all of a sudden turns his writing piece, you're like, what? This does not look legitimate from mm-hmm. this student, because I saw his writing the first day of class because I did a baseline writing,
right.
And this is not his voice. So there is some of that, and that detectors are getting smarter and smarter too, because they're actually using AI to detect if AI wrote it.
Right.
So it's pretty interesting how that's getting detected and so forth. So,
and technology has always done this. The first job I had, I was working at a video rental store, and they get these magazines that just come to the stores. And on one page was this device to help keep people from dubbing your VHS tapes. On the very next page was a device to counter that device. Nice. There's, you know, these things have always, it's always been this way with tech.
Yep.
With that, I think that there's always been a fear. You were touching on this before, Craig, about certain items or how to use them and how to integrate them into our society. And I'm curious about the positives of AI. All we talk about right now are the negative, 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 negative. It's here for a reason. We're using it for reasons. Are there positives that we have in the education system when it comes to artificial intelligence?
I think there are a lot of positives. I mean, one, for our teachers, it could help them generate new ideas. You know, just give them ideas, and then you build on that. You don't use those. But, you know, when I taught, I was a tech ed teacher, so figure out processes. And now I can, instead of Googling how do I fix this on this your car, then you get a bunch of websites, and you have to kind of go through it. Now you could actually just go to the AI engine, type in how do I do this, and actually they'll come back and tell you the steps, how to do it, what tools you need.
Yeah.
And you don't have to decipher 10 websites and 10 different opinions, you can kind of use that and go, okay, I've got a baseline. So I do think there are good positives for it in helping things in short term, and we'll see where it goes long term. But there's a lot of different ones. That's just one that really sticks to my head real easily. You know, generating topics for writing, you know, generating different ways to do different things.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah, that alone is a good enough reason to me. I mean, and the thing with this kind of tech, and again, something you touched on earlier, Craig, when we first get the microwave, well, we know it heats up popcorn or this and that. But wait a minute, I can make a meal in a minute? I'm a bachelor. This sounds great. I love this. You know, these kind of things. We find other uses for this stuff. We don't even know all the uses we might have for this in the next year, 2 years, or even 10 years down the line when it comes to some of this stuff. And anything that can help our teachers. Sounds good to me. Like, sign me up. Like, I'm all right with that. If we got a counter, we have to do some things to adjust to, okay. But you had me at helping our teachers.
Yeah.
And it sounds like that this can be one of those things that could, because you bring up a nice point there, Phil, I think, with the ideas part. A lot of AI was originally designed to just get the ball rolling. It wasn't meant to do the work for you.
Right.
It was meant to get your brain stimulated, to get the ideas flowing and everything. A lot of creative people have issues with that. A lot of people just in general have issues with that, coming up with ideas. Ask any stand-up comedian, hey, make me laugh. Like, it happens to everybody. So it's a nice tool for that use. It seems like there's also a lot of use that it could give towards being like a teacher's assistant in the future too, as far as that goes. And we all know that that is a spot that we could definitely use for our teachers as well.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, I mean, just kind of wrapping up on that whole part of helping teachers. I mean, in this book that I was just mentioned, that AI for Educators, talked about the calculator, like when that came onto the scene.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, like, oh my gosh, kids are never going to be able to do mental math anymore. It's going to be the end of math forever. Well, we obviously know that didn't happen.
Mm-hmm.
And we all have, you know, the famous line was, you're not always going to have a calculator in pocket.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, almost every single one of us has one of the most powerful calculators in your pocket now as you walk around. So and we still know how to do mental math, as Craig mentioned earlier. The things you need to know because of your job, you're going to memorize those and you're going to know them.
You know, and there's a part of this too, and I don't think we're forgetting this by any means. I'll speak for, I know you guys definitely aren't, but I think that I get a little lost with this sometimes. My kids are older and that and everything. There comes a point where we have to trust them, where we have to rely on them, to rely on their own brains, to rely on their own instincts, their own feelings. They're sitting there. They have their computer in front of them. They could use ChatGPT, or they could spend the next 3 hours doing this book report. They make that decision. That's on them. They have to do that. Whether they're 16 or 25, it's on them to make that call. And us giving them the hopefully helping them find that moral compass to be able to make that decision too. That's a big part of this as well, this whole process that we're going through.
Yeah, well, I mean, if you want to see how powerful these tools are, watch what young people do with them.
Yeah.
I mean, you're probably not going to see, you know, some 60 or 70 year old human being with the next money-making venture based on this AI technology. It's probably going to be a young person, right?
Yeah.
And that, I think, is a bit by design, and the idea that that they're going to investigate and figure out ways to integrate. And ultimately, if it comes down to starting a small business or figuring out a way to make money or making your life easier or all of those things, it's probably going to come from young people, right? And I think we don't even know, as adults, teachers, whatever our sector happens to be, where it's ultimately going to end and what you can possibly do with these things. And there are, of course, we talk about all the, to me, there's more positives in the short term than there are negatives. There's no question. Right. And I'm talking about its application in education. Mm-hmm. Clearly, I think there's some things we as a society are going to have to struggle with existentially speaking when you're talking about AI and what it means for a number of things, military and applications mm-hmm. and business applications and things along those lines. And I don't mean to connotate that you know, new technology is without any ill, you know, like it's all positive and we welcome it with open arms, because there are some, like I said, existential or philosophical questions that we have to work through as a society. But I think we're going to get there. But in terms of like classroom use, clearly we're not talking about, you know, nuclear arms race or AI drones or something
this
like that.
This isn't war games. This
correct.
I had to make that reference. I'm sorry. I knew you guys would get it, so I had to make it. Before I go to the next thing, Phil, was there anything else that you think is important to the topic of AI, of technology in the schools that we could touch on? You'll be with us again, of course, but we wrapped up.
With the AI and as with any technology, and in my job, it's my only constant is change. And Craig, I think, mentioned that before.
Yeah.
We're always changing. We don't really know what we don't know yet because it's just such a new thing, mm-hmm. but the AI is going to be really interesting in not only the writing side of what we're talking about, but other parts. You know, Craig's mm-hmm. mentioned imaging and mm-hmm. video. That's going to be the next step. And we're not even, I mean, I'm already seeing it in some images. I don't know if you've seen it at all or not,
but
where you can take old black and white photos from the, you know, and then it automatically puts color in it. It looks at the different things and it really colorizes them, which is amazing to me.
Yeah. Now they've got it where they can have Johnny Cash singing a pop song that just came out. Some of this stuff and everything. It's crazy. But it's also, I feel like your instincts tell you so much in life. You know, that fight or flight thing is still an existed thing that every human being has in them. And I feel like, I'm not saying it's a one-all that can tell all the time, it's a perfect lie detector, but I feel like you know oftentimes when you're seeing something or reading something. And that right there gives me a little bit more hope, along with certainly all the positives that AI can bring.
I would agree with you, James, as long as you're a rational, pragmatic human being, because we've seen what social media can do and the absolutely outlandish, bizarre, wild, you know, conspiracies that are out there that gain traction. And that's horrifying. So the deepfake stuff and whatnot is quite concerning. Mm-hmm. And that's what I'm alluding to in terms of these philosophical and existential sort of questions that we have to answer as a society and where this might possibly go. Because I think there's evidence that some individuals aren't intellectually prepped to do that kind of pragmatic and rational review of materials. And that is incredibly damaging.
I wanted to wrap up with mention. Well said, by the way. I wanted to wrap up with the annual Stuff the Bus supply drive that we're looking. It's getting right towards the last days of this here. We just had Terry in the morning talking about this a little bit. Craig, are there anything in particular that needs that we know of, or just encouraging people? What you got? If you can donate it, please do. We appreciate it.
Yeah, absolutely. So, as a member of the United Way board for the last 6 years, I am very appreciative and grateful for the United Way's organization to do Stuff the Bus each year. Additionally, the fact that I would highlight is that need has increased over that time. We saw the highest amount of need last year, and I would anticipate we're going to see as much, if not more, again this year. And frankly, anything that you can spare, that you can provide, will find its way into hands of kids that need it. And clearly, anything under the sun, colored pencils and crayons, you know, all the way up to backpacks and calculators, that sort of stuff. So,
plain colored folders, Terry mentioned, is a big one we could really use right now. We're always looking for plain colored notebooks as well, markers, highlighters. If you can pick up a couple extra when you're getting your own kids stuff or anything and drop them off, there's not many opportunities to impact the future, and you can do that with this.
Absolutely.
You know, we greatly appreciate everybody that's a part of this one, and you can find out more by going to uwswac.org. If people have follow-up questions for either of you gentlemen, Phil, if people want to reach out to you, find out a little bit more about some of the things we talked about, how can they reach you?
Best is just email me, probably right off of our district website. philip.bicklewell at wrps.net.
Excellent. Craig, same similar, question.
Right. My emails on the website are 715-424-6701.
And again, the website, wrps.org. Be sure to bookmark that webpage. Thank you both so much. Appreciate the great conversation, the great time. Have a good weekend.
Thank you.
Thanks.
We'll be back next week with more Midday Magazine right here on 97.5 FM, 1320 AM, WFHR, locally grown radio.